That's right. It is a continuation of the I Love Ann Show. I am Ann Eller, and it is my very great pleasure to have Congressman James Clyburn on the phone with us. How are you doing this morning, Congressman Clyburn?
I'm just fine. Thank you so much for having me.
Absolutely, absolutely. So you've been back here. You're in Columbia. Have you had a good breakfast yet today?
Yes, I just finished breakfast. When I'm in the district or when I'm home, I usually cook breakfast every morning, and I just finished breakfast. Have a good one.
Well, excellent, excellent. That sounds great. Now, of course, first of the year, they made a deal up there. You were, of course, part of that deal. Now we've got other issues coming up. But, one of my first questions to you is, you have been in Congress for a long time, and, you know, politics used to be, part of it was deal-making. What has happened to the ability to make deals, Congressman Clyburn?
Well, I think the ability to make deals is still there. What has happened in recent years is that some people have come to Washington with the notion that things have to be their way or no way. And they've run their campaigns, signing pledges to certain interest groups, and they come to Washington to do what those interest groups say do. None of us know when we leave home exactly what we will find when we get elected to office. And for somebody to sign a pledge during a campaign that they will never do something, irrespective of what conditions are, is just sophomoric at best. At worst, is silliness. I would never do anything like that. And I don't believe you sign over your obligations to the people who look to you to run the country to any one group. And that's what's got this thing tied up. People with big dollars have actually bought the services of certain people who get elected, and they own them. And so no matter what they say or what may be the conditions, they are owned by these elements, and they cannot do anything except what those people tell them to do. And that's what's going on in Washington. Nobody wants to say it, but, you know, I'm now 72 years old, and I tell everybody I think I've lived long enough to just tell it like I think it is, and that's the way it is.
Well, maybe you need to be teaching some classes in politics.
Well, I did that on yesterday. I have a granddaughter who is in the 10th grade, and I started yesterday morning spending 90 minutes with her economics class, of course, we combined with a couple of other classes.
Sure.
As well. And this is the kind of stuff I said to those 10th graders, because I used to teach 10th graders. My first job was teaching world history to 10th graders in Charleston, South Carolina. And so I had fun yesterday and talking to them about their responsibilities, talking to them about the obligations that we all have when we get elected to office. And I left them by saying that they should all live their lives with South Carolina's motto foremost in their thinking, while I breathe, I hope. And I said to those young people, always remember that none of us have the same set of experiences. We all come to the class with different experiences, and those experiences dictate how we see the world. And I said to them, that person sitting in the seat next to you has not had the same experiences that you've had. And they are shaped in their thought process by those experiences, just like you are shaped by yours. But learn to respect each other's experiences and respect each other's opinion, and just remember that you aren't always right. But that's totally foreign to a lot of these people who now get elected and come up to Washington and just say they are always right, nobody else. got a thought that's worth considering, and that's what's got us in this quagmire.
You know, I think you're right. I think that don't you think that if we went back to having maybe civics in school, that we'd have some possibility of turning out people who understand the fact that there's all different sides to that picture?
Sure. In fact, I was surprised to find out that schools don't do it anymore. In fact, I said to this class on yesterday, I said, you know, I learned in the seventh grade because they asked me a couple of questions. And I said, well, y'all remember now when you're in the seventh grade, you learn that we have three branches of government and you learn how many people make up the Congress. Lo and behold, I found out after a lot of them had not learned that.
I know. And I think that's a problem of not having civics. But, well, that's very interesting that you were teaching yesterday. Maybe you need to step it up and go to higher levels.
Well, you know, those are my plans. If I were to leave Congress anytime soon while I still have can put two thoughts together, I would love to go back into the classroom. I loved teaching. I just could not do the politics I wanted to do because of the rules at the time. Teachers were not allowed to be active in politics and certain
sure.
things you couldn't be members of. So I left teaching basically because of that, because I had a passion for politics, and that became a big, big issue back in 1970 when I ran for office the first time.
Absolutely. Well, that's very interesting that I brought that up and here you've been teaching. But let's talk about some of the stuff that's going on out there right now. Of course, Vice President Biden is working on the gun control, what to do about that. Where do you fall on this, Congressman Clyburn? You're from South Carolina.
Sure.
You know, this is a big gun state. Where do you fall on that?
Well, I understand I'm the only one in the delegation that sees it this way, but I think that we are, once again, I'm going to be totally honest with you, the NRA is a special interest group, and the NRA is not about protecting game hunters and sports clay shooters and that sort of thing. They are owned by the gun sales, the people who sell guns. And everything they do is designed to sell more guns. Nobody that's a hunter that I've ever talked to, one of my best friends in the Congress is Bennett Thompson, who spends almost every weekend hunting something. He doesn't need, he's got a lot of guns, but he doesn't have an AK-47.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't have a machine gun. He doesn't need a military-type weapon to go in the woods hunting deer or rabbits or birds. Why do you have to have 20 and 30 round clips in a gun to be a hunter? That is absolutely silly. And we know that is not what they are doing. This Second Amendment argument is a very specious argument. It is not valid. They know it's not valid. They are just saying stuff that they keep selling guns, to keep selling ammunition, and that's what this is all about. For anybody to tell me that that they've got a constitutional right to have a military-type weapon in their homes and in their automobiles, that is not what the Constitution says. In fact, if you read the court decision that upheld the Second Amendment, it specifically talked about handguns. It didn't talk about automatic weapons and 30 and 40-round clips. And so if anybody want to listen to that argument, then that's fine. But don't tell me that you are arguing what the Constitution says, because that's not what the court said that the Constitution says.
Okay. Now, how do you feel, though, about the possibility of using an executive order over working this through the normal channels through the Congress and the Senate?
Well, there are certain things I suspect that the president can do using an executive order. I'm a big believer that the executive order ought to be used. You get elected president, you have a certain responsibility to lead, and the executive orders are things by which you lead. And I want to say for your listeners' pleasure or maybe their displeasure, don't tell me that the executive order ought not be used when there is a lack of leadership. The slaves would never, my forebears, would never have been freed if they had waited on Congress to pass a law freeing the slaves. Everybody's running around talking about what a great movie Lincoln is. Well, Lincoln freed the slaves by executive order. The Emancipation Proclamation was an executive order. Congress would never have done it. In 1948, President Truman integrated the armed services by executive order because Congress was never going to do it. He was propelled to do that by an incident that took place right here in South Carolina when the sheriff, I won't call the name of the county because I now represent the county. No, I don't. It's right outside of what I represent. Joined in lynching an African-American soldier coming home from World War II in his uniform, beat him half to death, blinded him, just because he was sitting on the bus. He wasn't doing anything to anybody. And so Truman used the executive order, said, we aren't going to have this anymore. Now, you're going to tell me that we have to wait for Congress to collectively do its will when it's time to lead. The president needs to lead, just like he needs to use the executive order, as I've been saying for 2 years now, to raise the debt limit. When Congress goes out and spend money, and then they're going to come back and say, no, yeah, I voted to spend this money to give this tax cut, to go to war, to do this new drug plan. But now that the bills come due, I'm not going to pay the bill. That's what you're saying when you want to raise the debt limit.
Okay.
It's okay to spend the money, but it's not okay to pay the bills. The president needs to say, these bills must be paid. I'm not going to run the risk of the country losing its credit rating because we won't pay our bills. So the executive order ought to be used to lead when Congress fails to do its duty. That's why Congress is at 9%. I saw a thing the other day that says that people like cockroaches more than they like Congress.
That is true.
That's an amazing statistic to see.
Absolutely. Well, can I ask you a question now?
Sure.
Okay. So, but what do we do as far as the gun control? All right. So you're saying that he should use an executive order. Why don't we do something more for mentally ill people or people with because most of the things that are happening are guns getting into the wrong hands. So how do we help those that need the help? We don't seem to be doing that much anymore, are we, Congressman Carter?
No, we're not. And in fact, you'd be amazed at how hard we had to fight to get parity for mental illness. In fact, if you go back and check, you will see that Patrick Kennedy from Rhode Island and I forgot Ramstad's first name, Republican from Minnesota. You see that yours truly joined with the two of them fighting to get mental health parity in legislation. Because I don't know what it is about people who cannot seem to come to grips with the fact that there are certain illnesses that people have that they are not responsible for. I can see you sometimes refusing to pass legislation because people have refused to do the responsible thing with their health. But if you're born and find yourself because of your genes or something else with some kind of a mental illness, Congress needs to step up to the plate. That's when we need to be acting responsibly on behalf of all the American people and not treat mental illness as if it's the person's own fault. That's crazy stuff. But that's where we are in this country, and I know that a lot of your listeners will be writing you some nasty letters about how radical Jim Clyburn is. Well, maybe I am, but I think Abraham Lincoln was radical when he signed the Emancipation Proclamation.
Absolutely. Well, I just don't understand. I mean, we used to have, I mean, it's about people's rights, but it's also about protecting people from themselves and from others. So this is
That's
what
true.
I don't understand.
And you've said a mouthful when you say protecting people from themselves. I've studied and read about cases of people even mutilating themselves because of a mental illness. So sometimes you have to protect people from themselves.
Absolutely. So any possibility that you think that's going to be addressed?
Yes, I do. And if Congress fails to address that adequately, the president will look for ways to do things regarding the mental illness by executive order. I just believe that when big things need to be done and there are too many little people sitting in office and refusing to do the big things, then the big guy ought to go and do it.
Okay. Now, having said that, where are we going to be in getting our debt under control? I understand we obligated for these things in the past. The debt ceiling should be raised. But how do we move forward, Congressman Clyburn, when we keep spending more money? You were part of that super committee that said we'd go into sequestration. 1st of January came all last year. It never was addressed. Now it looks like the end of February. I think this is going to come up again. How are we going to get together to make the cuts? I mean, are we going to use executive order to make cuts to all programs, not just the military?
Well, I think we may come to some of that. I think that the president ought to go take a scalpel, not a meat axe, but a scalpel, and go through the budget item by item to see where it is that we can cancel programs, where it is that we can postpone the implementation of programs. Now let me say a couple of things for your listeners' pleasure here. We need to come to grips with how we got to where we are. It's like almost anything else in life. You can't solve a problem until you recognize what is causing the problem. If you've got a leak on your water line, you got to find the source of the leak before you can fix it. Now, we got in the shape we're in today because we are fighting. We went to war against Afghanistan. We went to war against Iraq. We didn't pay for any of those wars. We fought both those wars on a credit card. We passed a new prescription drug plan costing trillions of dollars, and we put it on the credit card. When we started this adventure back in 2001, 2002 to be technical about it, we were running a $280 billion surplus. But if you go and fight a war and not pay for it, then you fight two wars and not pay for it. You give two tax cuts and don't pay for it. At some point in time, the bills come due. And that's what is going on now. And I wish the public would focus on the fact they say that it's about spending. Yes, it's about spending. Spending on two wars and not paying for it. When we fought World War II, fought World War I, we paid for those wars. We rationed. I'm old enough to remember those little ration stamps that my mother was sending me to the store to get a loaf of bread. If you were to lose one of those stamps, you might be you might lose your life for that. We never have gone to war before and not sacrificed to pay for it. So that's why we got to where we are.
But don't we have to do something about that and also spending going forward?
Yes, and we did. When we passed the Budget Control Act 2 years ago, they created the super committee. We cut $1.5 trillion in spending with that act. The Budget Control Act cut $1.5 trillion. We didn't raise one dime in revenue. President Obama agreed to extend the Bush tax cuts for the very wealthy people. At the same time, we cut $1.5 trillion, and people act like they don't know we did that. That's what we did. And then when we passed Obamacare, everybody talking about Obamacare, this and Obamacare, that, we cut $716 billion out of Medicare. We did that. And when Romney ran out here accusing us of cutting $716 billion out of Medicare, and if he got elected, he would put that money back, people just jump up and down and yell. So if he could put $716 billion back, we must have cut it out. So when people say we don't want to cut any entitlements, we cut Medicare by $716 billion, and people act like we didn't do that. We did that.
Well,
and we are proposed additional cuts, but nobody want to raise any revenue.
Okay, but you did raise revenue in the
In this last bill, we raised revenue by $620 million, which is about half of what we should have done.
Okay. But how are we going to structure things for the future? I understand what you're saying about these wars, and they have to be set up to pay those down and everything else. But we do have, on the flip side, there was the big cut to the military, and there was the big cut to social programs.
No, ma'am, we didn't cut that.
We didn't, but that was set up in the
Super Committee. That was set up to be cut if we didn't pass this bill, and we didn't pass it. We postponed those cuts. And I will say today, and I firmly believe this, we are never going to get to those cuts the way they are in the sequestration bill. I think we're going to do a lot of those cuts. Now, I want your listeners to really focus in on the fact that the defense budget is totally different from our military budget. We have two subcommittees in the Appropriations Committee, two separate subcommittees dealing with those two things. You got military, construction and stuff, and then you got defense. Now, there is a lot of waste taking place in the defense budget. And every time we have an audit, we find things taking place like a defense contractor billing the government for $750 for a lid on a toilet bowl.
Well, we have that problem all the way across, don't we? I mean, just look at the GSA. There are all kinds of problems. And one of the things I don't understand is why we haven't, with each one of these powers are underneath a congressional group, right? Why is it that they don't cut within that? I mean, whether they were little cuts or not, they would add up. And yet we still don't seem to be doing that.
Yes, ma'am. That's how we got the $716 billion out of Medicare when we passed the Affordable Care Act. We didn't take that money out of benefits. We took that money out of those buckets that we found that people were bilking the government out of money.
Well, how about the GSA? How about what was going on there, Congressman Clyburn?
Sure, absolutely. You don't need to have no $2 million party. Sure.
Exactly. But who's overseeing this? This is what I don't understand. Is not Congress, aren't the different committees supposed to be overseeing how they're spending their money?
They don't oversee the actions of the people. Nobody in Congress police people's actions. You appropriate the money, and you got to hope. You know, I've been running something all my life. This is my first elective office. If I hire somebody to do a job, hopefully they're capable of doing the job, and they will do the job. If they misuse the trust that's put in them, you don't know the trust has been misused until it's been misused.
Well, that's true.
And then you respond to it. In a way, so Congress can respond to the misuse of this money by cutting off money for the next time, but that misuse has already taken place. And you said, well, we aren't going to ever give you any more money for this, or we're going to forbid you from ever spending money in this way again. But none of that can happen until you find that it needs to happen. And we're doing that. You will never see, well, I shouldn't say never, but I don't believe you're going to see any more million-dollar parties taking place by GSA.
Probably not. And you told me earlier that are we going to get to some type of agreement? Are we going to make this? I'm sure the debt ceiling will be raised, but how do we keep going forward? What is the plan from the president through you, through what you've seen? What do you think? How do we get somewhere?
Well, I think that we're going to do several things. I think we're going to take a hard look at the way we fund entitlement programs. I think that Social Security, all this notion about Social Security not being there for our children, I think Social Security is going to be there for our children. I think that right now people pay Social Security income on their first about $113,000, I believe.
Sure.
Is what you pay Social Security income on now. It means that if you make $113,000 or less, you pay Social Security income on 100% of your earnings. If you make $226,000, you only pay Social Security on 50% of your earnings.
Exactly.
I think that we are going to take a look at lifting those caps so that people who make more will continue to pay into Social Security.
Sure.
Because even if you're making collecting Social Security on 50% of your income, when you retire, you get 100% of the Social Security benefit. I think we're going to start means testing Social Security. Warren Buffett has told me in one-on-one conversations I've had with him that, you know, we need to means test Social Security. He says, look, I get a Social Security check every month. I got no business getting a Social Security check. So
does he sign it back over to the government, or does he keep it, though?
Well, he says he keeps it.
Yeah.
He's entitled to it.
Sure, I understand.
But he does that on principle. But what he's saying, he shouldn't get it. Warren Buffett gives away a lot.
Yes, he does.
But a lot of people who are bilking the system don't give away anything. So let's don't give it to them in the first place and trust them to give it away.
Exactly. So you think upping the rate that
I think the lifting the caps on Social Security income is something we need to look at. And quite frankly, a lot of my friends get upset with me about this. I think we ought to take a serious look at how we calculate the consumer price index, see whether or not there is a more realistic way to look at that. Right now, Social Security and Medicare, a lot of things that we do based on, even veterans benefits and all that, based on the CPI, the Consumer Price Index. That's a system that deals with our spending habits and what contributes to the cost of living increase. I think we need to take a hard look at whether or not what we're doing is realistic. And I know that puts me at peril with some of my friends, but it's something that we probably ought to look at.
Anything else that you can see futuristically that could be on the table?
Well, I think everything ought to be on the table. And I don't say that I have all the answers. I think that I'm always amazed when you sit around the table talking to people how various thoughts come to the surface that a lot of people hadn't thought about. So I think that we ought to take a serious look at some of this stuff.
And one more question.
Mm-hmm.
The future of America.
I'm sorry?
The future of America.
Uh-huh.
Are we going to be there? Are we going to work our way through this to be able to get to some future where the government is not the primary driver of our economy and everything else going on here? Are we going to pull back the government, or are we going to continue to grow government?
I think government is going to, I think the economy is going to grow, and our population is going to increase. People are going to be living longer. And so I know there's a culture that says when people get old, we kick them out on the ice and leave them out there somewhere for the polar bears to hit them. We don't have that kind of a culture. I think that we ought to really take care of people when they're in their golden years. These are the people who, when they were productive, they made this country what it is, people who went off to fight the wars to keep us secure.
Absolutely.
And when they find themselves ailing and then and up in age, we ought to be benevolent and we ought to take care of these people. And more of those people. People are going to be coming back from Iraq. They're already coming back from Iraq. They will be coming back from Afghanistan, and they're going to be maimed for life. We got to take care of these people. And this stuff of just cut, cut, cut is a lot of silliness. We need to really honor those people who have honored us with their service. And so that all of this is going to be a part of our future going forward. And I think that we ought to sit down and really get serious about what we do about this and not then be going to cut taxes. We got to cut taxes because a lot of these people whose taxes are getting cut didn't sacrifice anything. Never went to war. None of their children went to war. And they're getting all the tax cuts because they got wealth. That, to me, is unfair. And we need to take a look at a fairness in our tax system. There is no fairness in our tax system now. Everybody ought to be making some kind of a sacrifice, and that is the way we've got to look at things going forward.
Well, I understand. I just am concerned about the size of government and should it continue to grow.
Well, I don't think there's anything wrong with government continuing to grow. So long as it's not growing beyond that which is necessary to service people. The country continues to grow. I just said people are getting older.
Sure.
And so I've never seen a year when we didn't have more people in spite of how many people may have died. There are more people than we had the year before. So we got many more people in this country in 2013 than we had in 2012. And we're going to have many more in 2014.
But that doesn't mean that the size of government needs to grow, does it?
Well, I don't know about the size. Well, the responsibility of government will grow.
The bureaucracy, the number of offices, and the hugeness of the number of people that are employed by the government. Does it?
Well, you know, come on, what does that do? Why don't we just eliminate government altogether?
I like it. What do you think?
Well, I think that you're going to worry about who's going to pick up the garbage tomorrow morning, too.
No, I understand, but I'm just talking about, you know, if we're going to pull back on government a little bit, I understand that we need to take care of, and certain programs need to, but don't we have a lot of duplication? Don't we have a lot of over bloatedness, shall we say, in the federal government?
Well, that's what I said. That's why we took the $716 billion out of Medicare, because it was bloated. I just said that. Sure, there's a lot of that. And I said the president ought to get a scalpel and go program by program and see what can be cut, what should be cut, what can be eliminated, what should be scaled back. That's what we ought to do.
Absolutely. Well, Congressman Clyburn, is there anything else you'd like to say? I thoroughly have enjoyed our conversation. I always look forward to it, and sometimes I think I should pick up the phone and call you more often.
Please do. I'm right here.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Anything else you'd like to say?
I think I've said too much already.
I've enjoyed it. Thank you so much, Congressman Clyburn.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.